supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
If you're struggling with your 2019 resolution to shed a few pounds, here's a regimen that temporarily tips the scales in your favor without dieting. Joining me on Sky Talk to explain is Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, for a few moments anyway, you can shed almost all those pounds.
In fact, you can for the low, low price of just $250,000. Yes, that's right, folks. The Virgin Galactic Travel Service to Space is quickly coming to its first actual passenger voyages. In fact, a test flight that was held just last week did take a passenger, its very first passenger. As it turns out, the passenger, Beth Moses, is the astronaut trainer for Virgin Galactic. And if you recall, Richard Branson has had this fabulous idea to create a system through which regular people can have an experience in space, can actually travel to space and become, quote-unquote, astronauts.
Regular folks with $250,000 to spare.
Just us regular people that have $250,000 burning a hole in our pockets. Yes, we too can go to space. Coming soon. But that passenger, Beth Moses, had a wonderful opportunity not only to experience zero gravity, microgravity, weightlessness, whatever we'd like to call that experience. She also had a chance to have the cabin experience that travelers will have.
Is that economy, business, or first class?
You know, it's actually all one class. Everybody in there together, that $250,000 buys you a first class seat, but there are only 12 passengers per craft. So it's not too crowded, but you'll have an opportunity to see the Earth from 55 to 60 miles above. You'll easily be able to see the curvature of the Earth. It'll look to you just like it looks to astronauts. The only difference is the trip itself only lasts a few hours altogether, and the amount of time that you actually have, quote-unquote, in space in a weightless environment is only a few minutes. So it'll be a fleeting, although exhilarating experience.
Now, Beth Moses was an astronaut trainer, though not an astronaut. Let's call her a passenger. And with that, let's pay respects to the first female astronaut, though she, too, was a civilian.
I wonder how many people could guess who this was. It was Valentina Tereshkova. The date she flew was June 16, 1963. At that time, she was only 26 years old. She was one of a group of five women that had been selected as potential astronauts, or cosmonauts in this case, to make this trip. Her flight lasted almost 3 days, 48 orbits around Earth, and believe it or not, she actually is the only woman who can say that she flew on a solo flight. She's the only woman to have that distinction of flying solo in space. It's interesting that the reason why she was chosen is because of her training as a skydiver. She had become a skydiver and had become very proficient, and this, of course, qualified her in this particular instance to become an astronaut.
Now, for early cosmonauts and astronauts, to what extent were the occupants actually flying the craft versus that craft being pretty much guided from the ground?
When humans began to fly, one of the stipulations, particularly in the American program, was that the astronauts, even in the Mercury program, wanted to have control of the spacecraft. And it actually turned out to be critically important because of certain kinds of malfunctions that occurred during these early flights, in which if the astronauts didn't have control of the spacecraft, certainly would have resulted in disaster. Now, as you go through the missions, you can see that there are situations or instances in which spacecraft control is handed back and forth from on board the spacecraft down to the ground. And the capability to operate the spacecraft from the ground certainly was an important one. Just in case anything happened to the astronaut on board, the spacecraft could still be controlled. That still is the same situation today, even with International Space Station.
Remarkable to consider that she, even to this date, is the only female to fly solo, yet that seems like a record that might persist moving forward.
I think it certainly will. Immediately after her flight, those first flights that were flown by solo astronauts in the early programs of both Russia and the United States, immediately after that, it was teams of astronauts that flew first in pairs and then in multiples. So we went from single astronaut to two astronauts, then to 3 astronauts, and then came the space shuttle era in which we had as many as 7 astronauts on board at any one time, and then we come to the space station era in which we have 10 astronauts on board at any one time, maximum number on board at one time.
Derek, with clear, dark skies this week, what's available to be seen overhead?
I always find it amazing that observing can shift from the evening sky to the morning sky and still be so dramatic. In a line tomorrow morning between 5:45 and 6 a.m., you'll find the moon down close to the southeastern horizon, and then coming up in a diagonal toward the right, you'll find brilliant Venus, followed by Saturn, then bright Jupiter, and then if you go just a little bit further to the right, there's a bright reddish star called Antares, the brightest star of Scorpius, available then. And then in the evening, 7 p.m., Mars is very high in the western sky, easy to see. If you wait until next Friday evening, you'll find Mars directly above a thin crescent moon at about 6:45 p.m.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Bitz, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Sky Talk.